The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. You are rejoining We the People Radio. Doing a two-hour deal on the forest today.
Yeah, all right.
Smartening everybody up on the forest. So we're here with Dave Myers. He is the supervisor of the Shasta Trinity National Forest. And how many people work in your forest? Like 400 and whatever, it's 470
yeah.
or something?
Yeah, in the summertime we have a lot more when all of our firefighters and college kids come to work for us, work in recreation and wildlife and fisheries.
So tons of stuff.
Yeah, we'll have 700 people there.
So first half, we sort of chatted about, you know, fire and that kind of stuff. But here on the break, you guys were talking about thinning, some of the thinning. Okay, so explain how that works, because there are people who still believe that cutting any trees, that, you know, we shouldn't be cutting any trees.
Right. So, you know, part of our mission is to manage for healthy forests, of course. And all lands, we have a diversity of types of lands on the National Forest, and some of those we definitely identify for forest management, those that are forested and have different attributes that they're, you know, roaded, and we've managed those, meaning that we've had silviculturists identify timber sales where we've logged and then we've replanted or they've naturally regenerated. And that might have been 40, 50 years ago, sometimes shorter, sometimes longer, depending on the forest. And it's time to thin the forest, so we would thin to maintain the health of that stand of trees. With pine, it's generally sooner because they grow quick. We were talking about ponderosa pine. So you need to thin those trees so the remaining trees can grow healthier. If you do that, we do that on the forest, and it is fairly costly, usually done with a chainsaw, you know, manual labor if it's pre-commercial. Pre-commercial being the trees you're cutting down are not big enough to be sending to the lumber mill because they just are smaller diameters, 4 inch.
And so they cut those down and either leave them lay or they chip them and leave the chips laying on the forest floor to just biomass back in?
Right.
Okay.
And that's a good practice. It contributes back to the soil. If we chip them, you know, generally chipping's, you know, for your audience, you know, is a piece of machinery that chips them up, and we could send that to a biomass plant if those are available. Many times they're not available because that's costly to put those on trucks. But we do a lot of that on the Shasta Trinity.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we thin the forest where it's commercial thinning, where the trees are large enough, like larger than 8-inch diameter.
And you would sell that chunk of work to a company that is a logging company.
So you put a sale up, you mark the trees that you want to cut, they go in and bid on it, and
and you're left with a thin stand that usually looks pretty nice, and it allows more sunlight, less competition for the remaining trees, and they grow larger and much more vigorous.
And it provides habitat for, you know, grass will grow, and I can get more deer, more ground.
Well, less animals. Likely to go up in a giant catastrophic fireball.
That's right.
Right.
And, they're more resistant to insect and disease. The insects, again, are natural occurring, but they increase in population during droughts where trees are already stressed.
Stressed out, yeah.
So there's a lot of, and that's what we do in the Forest Service, a lot of it. But we also like to be well-known for multiple-use management. We have a lot of other uses, hunting and fishing.
Yeah, let's talk about the recreation.
Yeah, because let's say on this forest here, I got your stats right here.
Yeah, right.
1,500 miles of trails.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a lot of trails. 1,000 roads for passenger cars, 3,600 miles of roads for high clearance vehicles. Is that like four wheel drive type stuff?
Yeah, just your typical four wheel drive SUV, pickup, Jeep.
So is that 4,600 miles altogether, or is it 1,000 of the 30? It's two totally separate things. That's a lot of road.
We're a fairly heavily roaded forest. Some of it because of our past timber management practices. The timber sales provided for the road systems to be put in, and that happened, you know, from the 50s and 60s and 70s on.
Because the loggers did that.
Yeah, it was associated with, you know, and that allowed for improved access to the public to our national forest.
And firefighting,
not on all the areas. You mentioned earlier our wilderness areas, of course, are not roaded. So we do not allow mechanized travel in there, but we do, of course, allow hiking. You can ride your horse in there, so it's a different experience. And that's what we try to balance, is the different experiences for the public to access and use the national forest. And we have a good mix of that on this forest.
Yeah, when it says 145 developed recreation sites, because you have 76 campgrounds.
Yeah, which is a lot of campgrounds.
That's a lot of campgrounds, yeah. And group campgrounds, 10, picnic areas, 16. You have 12 boat launches?
Yeah.
I guess I didn't know there were that many. But what's 145 developed recreation sites? What does that mean?
Well, those are primarily campgrounds, and then there'd be trailheads. Some of them are just picnic areas, rest stops like along the Trinity River where you pull out and for fishermen access, a lot of things like that.
Oh, like up there at Hat Creek, you pull off, you got a nice little picnic area along the creek, you got fishing access. Yeah, okay.
So, and that's our recreation program. It's expensive to
maintain
that. Because
that doesn't cost anybody anything. The campgrounds do, but you can stop at the picnic areas, and that's not a charge typically, is it?
Typically not. Generally, when we charge, it's because we're providing some service with restrooms or water back to the public. And a lot of times, too, our fees are allowed to return to that site to maintain the site.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah. And it's hard. You can imagine how hard it is just to maintain your house. Maintain things in the mountains, especially if there's snow and rain.
Well,
and
you got animals eating stuff.
Not everybody's real nice to the, you know, the site. You know,
there is unfortunate vandalism to a lot of our sites.
Well, snow's really hard on structures too.
Snow is hard on everything.
Yeah.
So back in the, like, since you've been doing this like 35 years, not the same job, but okay, so 35 years ago, probably a giant percentage of your budget was from harvesting trees. I would imagine way more than now.
It was, we had a much larger timber program back in the 60s and 70s and, you know, from the late 80s through the 90s till now, it has declined.
Kind of neck down.
We are trying to have a upward trend in managing our vegetation. Vegetation includes timber management, fuels management, again, to address some of these larger high-intensity wildfires that we're experiencing. And, you know, that's not just anecdotal. We have data on that, you know, especially if you remember the Yellowstone fires of 1988. Remember that?
Yeah.
Pretty catastrophic.
Oh, those were just massive, yeah.
And that was, it was lodgepole. It was at high elevation. But it moved across there. Since that time, if you look at our data, we've had larger wildfires. Our fire seasons are longer, and the fires are burning with higher intensity. And you can point to a lot of reasons, but those are facts.
And well, what do you think are the major contributors to that? Is it just the drought? I mean, is that the major? I mean, we've only been in this drought for what now? Five, 6 years.
Droughts don't happen overnight. I mean, they kind of creep up on you. So
I think it's a combination. I believe there's a climate change factor in there over that length of time. We've seen some of that. Certainly, drought by regions. So from there, it's hard to say. But you know. We're fighting fire darn near year-round in California.
Right. And you know, one thing that people – it used to be not – I'm assuming it's still the same. When the Forest Service puts a sale up, doesn't a portion of those proceeds go back to the local school districts? Is that
– Yeah, there's what we call the 25% fund. 25% of the receipts would go back to the counties through the states to support schools and roads.
Mm-hmm.
You bet.
So counties like Trinity, what percentage of their county – It's a huge percent.
I believe it's 72% national forest system. And so that's a large percentage that I manage of that county. I don't manage the county, but...
So there's no property tax, but bottom line, 70% of the county ground is not eligible to generate property tax. So when you start looking at supporting police, fire, schools, roads, all that stuff...
It just makes it that much more important that we manage the forests and
make it and if we can,
kick some of that funding back to the local folks.
Yeah.
Okay, so as that has diminished, then we have payment in lieu of taxes. We have a PILT line item budget in the congressional series.
And there's secure rural schools.
And there's that, yep.
Which is another.
But now that's being kind of considered as like a rural welfare, if you will.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really looked down on, and what I think is not realized is that used to be, it's like, hey, we're going to take your ground, we're going to make it part of the national forest system, but when we harvest the timber, we're going to kick part of it back, and that way you guys don't, you know, actually wind
and,
up.
And that's a good program.
That's a great idea,
yeah.
But if we don't get to harvest,
yeah, then it hurts.
It changes the entire
sure.
dynamic.
Yep.
Okay, so more of that in 5 seconds after we chat with our advertisers and find out what snazzy music Bob has for us. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
And sing and you cuss and fight. On Saturday night you go to Eugene, and on a Sunday morning your pockets are clean. Will you tell me something, Mr. Lumberjack? Is it one for forward and three for back? Is it two for stop or four for go? Boy, ask a whistle punk. I don't know.
Well, there you go.
Oh, yeah, forget to bust into the lumberjack
yeah.
songs. There's
yeah.
plenty.
Yeah.
I can
most
think
people
of...
don't know what a whistle punk is. Yeah.
Do tell.
Yes. He's the guy when they run the big, when they're hauling the logs up out of the valley on the big cable, he's sending that thing up and down the line to haul the logs out. Yeah, you got to pay attention out there. You got a log on the side of your cranium. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
So, okay, so we were talking about recreation on the forest.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're talking about recreation, then we've got to talk about all the recreation.
Yeah.
And part of the recreation, unfortunately, out here in the West includes marijuana.
Yeah. One of my favorites.
Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is unfortunately grown in our national forests.
Yeah. Illegally, I might add.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah. Not on purpose.
Just no good upside to any of it. You know, we're referred to as the Golden Triangle between the Shasta Trinity, the Mendocino, the Six Rivers. And it's much worse than the old days of the 60s or 70s when you referred to, hippies growing a little bit of marijuana or Humboldt home grown.
Garberville was like the worst it got.
It's way beyond that. This is commercial.
It's like on the national forests of what I'm concerned about with the illegal grows, grown by non-citizens of the United States.
A.K.A. Mexican cartels.
Cartels, primarily.
And some Hmong, are they cartels too?
I don't know if they're cartels, but they're criminal organizations, yeah.
Definitely criminal, definitely illegal. The concerns I have are the threat to our publics who unknowingly
stumble
upon
on,
these.
Yeah.
Sure.
To our own employees who have come across the illegal grows and the armed growers,
mm-hmm.
And then also, and not to be underestimated, is the negative natural resource effects from all of the pesticides, which include insecticides and rodenticides. Rodenticides, those to kill rodents that would otherwise eat the marijuana plants, and the unauthorized use of millions of gallons of water.
Mm-hmm.
And fertilizers.
Water was a huge issue this year.
Oh, yeah, but if you look at the pictures, I don't know if you've ever seen the pictures of some of these grows they've busted and the trash that's laying around. I mean, it's just a total mess. But look at what that trash is. It's empty insecticide cans. It's bottles. It's they use some heavy-duty chemicals out there.
Be the stat man for us, Dave.
I've got to be the stat guy. We just cleaned up on the National Forest, seven sites last week.
This is just the Shasta
just
Trinity National
yeah.
Forest. Okay.
And cooperative effort.
Mm-hmm.
And it does take cooperation because we don't get any one-line item to do this. And it's a scourge on the National Forest, in this area particularly. On these seven sites, nearly 25,000 pounds of garbage.
Whoa!
Mm. Okay, they illegally used, daily estimate of the water, 292,000 gallons. And, of course, we're having a drought. Yeah. Per
Holy
day.
Per day?
Yeah. 8,000 pounds of fertilizer.
Yeah, and no telling what that is.
51 pounds of the rodenticide. Now, that rodenticide is not EPA approved. It's illegally coming in from Mexico. Extremely lethal to animals.
Is that the commercial name of it, rodenticide?
Well, no, that's a common name.
It's what it is.
Kill the rodent.
Okay, that's what it is.
It's rat poison.
Yeah.
But it's stuff we're not allowed to use here.
So if it kills rodents, what else does it kill?
Well, it's killing bears. Mm-hmm. It's known to be killing fisher, which is a little fur bear. About the size of a bread box, if you know what a bread box is these days.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. Good thing we're all old.
Yeah. And the fisher is a unique little species, lives in the forest, so it's dying.
Well, don't they eat mice, or what do they eat?
Well, they'll eat mice, yeah.
The fisher?
Squirrels, yeah.
Yeah,
and so when they're getting this contamination from eating a dead rodent, they too are dying, and they're a threatened species, or proposed to be threatened. Because their population's already at risk. And so there's all these different negative cumulative effects from the illegal marijuana grows.
And all that stuff goes into the water table.
Down to the water.
It all gets in the food chain, because if you hunt at all, mm-hmm. good luck.
What's going on with the deer population?
Well, it's there is just research going on now by private individuals, and they've made presentations to us, and they're showing bioaccumulation of these the rodenticides in the livers of deer and in quail. So these are game animals, obviously.
Sure, we're going to be eating those.
And so it's of great concern. And then, of course, there's the pollution into the water. Our Forest Service crews, after the wildfires, looking at streams and the effects of the wildfires on the streams, found that the streams below some of the known marijuana grows had salt accumulations, salts being deposited from the runoff from the over-fertilization mm-hmm. of marijuana grows. So it's one thing after another.
What about the direct contact of those products on, firefighters, law enforcement, when they go into one of those grows?
We're just learning more and more about that, but it's so I can't tell you exactly what it causes, but our law enforcement officers have had a lot of different exposures, from contacting the illegal growers or just the plants as they chop them down when we do go and raid the sites, or all the unauthorized irrigation pipeline that they put in, cleaning that up, are exposed to all this. And so it's...
And again, these are products that aren't even legally used in... state. They bring this stuff in
because
it's so effective, but it's not legal, and that's why it's not legal.
Exactly.
And you're not talking about a little small backyard garden. I mean, this is, what kind of acreage are you looking at for some of these grows?
Well, they could be 5 or 10 acres or 20. They're spread out, though. They're different than the grows on the private land. Private land, if you fly and look at those, it might look like
like corn.
Grape.
I mean, just
rowed
up.
Roses, might be an acre or two, but on the national forest, they're 10 and 20 acres, but they might be 70,000 plants this year. I mean, huge numbers of plants. And the plants are growing big. They're not the little scraggly plant you used to see on a T-shirt from the 70s. They're big, if you will.
Back to college again.
Yeah, changed since I was a kid.
A big, thick Christmas tree. That's how big these marijuana plants are. Oh, yeah. So picture that, 70,000 plants like that. So this area of the Northern California, between the federal lands and stuff grown on the private land, produces a lot of the marijuana in the United States, and it's a huge impact on your national forests. And we're working on it, but it's a big problem.
Mm. So I'm kind of always, I can always hear the taxpayer's wallet in the back of my mind.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge cost to taxpayers.
Yeah. It's a huge cost.
That's not a benefit to them using the forest. There are all sorts of things you're not able to do for people who would like to come and recreate.
Yes.
So you can't do that. And so where's the environmental community on that?
They're very opposed to it, too. It's just we are having to work cooperatively with multiple interests to attack this problem. We have to come together stronger as communities to attack this problem, because people that are not United States citizens are taking away some of our national forest resources and are a threat to our publics and to us.
Well, they have.
And they're always armed. So it isn't like if someone's out there hiking and you know, stumbles across one of these things, they're all just having sandwiches together.
It's not just Barney Five going in with his six shooter to bust them. It's a full SWAT team like event when you go in, because they are multiple people and they're armed and they're desperate type of people.
Yeah. And you're talking about a lot of money. I mean, they're put in charge of an operation and they're going to defend it. I mean, they just prosecuted a guy the other day.
I would imagine if you don't come back with your allotment, there's consequences for that.
Oh, I'm sure there is. They just prosecuted or sentenced a guy the other day, I heard, that actually had some folks working for him that were illegals that he was basically, they were basically like slaves, and he treated them that way. And when they busted the operation, they kind of ratted on the guy, and I think he got, I don't know, 50 years or something. It was a bad guy, and that's who's out there in our forest. So, yeah, stumble onto his grow. I'm sure he'd just show you the way out.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that's why when people say, you know, well, we ought to legalize all this, you know, it's a victimless crime. Well, here's your victimless crime. And there's money to be made, so that's not going away.
No, it's unfortunately, this is a good area to grow that marijuana. You know, it's been an increasing problem on the national forests, many national forests in the West. It's just, again, unfortunate. This area is like a golden triangle because of the conditions for growing, because you do need water. And see, they dam up the streams and put that black irrigation pipe in and then spread that water out across a hillside. And it's remote. It's just not like you can see these. You stumble upon them.
Right.
But they're in backwoods. They're hard to get to. And quite a problem. But we're really trying to work on it. But it's probably one of our biggest challenges, and ever increasing, we're getting more information on the toxicity of these sites. We're referring to them as hazardous material sites.
And what's that doing to your budget? I mean, is it starting to consume more and more?
Well, we don't have a direct budget for it. You know, it's just that kind of thing that's happening on the forest that we have to take little pieces of all of our budget to go work on it.
It just takes resources.
Right.
Yeah.
And what was the, give the water number again?
Let's see. Well, it was estimated water usage over that 150-day growing season was close to 4 million gallons. And that was over these seven sites, 292,000 gallons a day. So they use a lot of water.
And now, see, here you have people, you know, this is kind of like a little problem for me.
Yeah.
You know, in California, everybody's supposed to let their yards die and take showers for 5 seconds and all this stupid stuff. When half of our water goes to fish and 3% of the water is what we're going to cut ultimately. 10% is used by people. So if we save 30% of the water used by, you know, towns and stuff like that, it's 3% of California's water. I don't know what the total water usage is in the state, but I got to tell you that probably we could have let our yards grow.
Well, and what I relate it to is the wildlife and the fish.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're directly killing the wildlife.
Anybody else did that, they'd be hung out.
They're polluting the water where we already have a threatened salmon and steelhead directly.
Mm-hmm.
We're not estimating it. We know that.
Sure. But we're constantly ringing out the ranchers and farmers because, you had a goldfish died in their irrigation ditch. Oh, my God, it's a crisis. And here you got these guys. Who knows how many?
Yeah.
How many they're killing?
Yeah, that's just what we know about. I mean, imagine what's out there. Obviously, a lot more out there that's not getting caught, or they wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, and what's the half-life on these chemicals? I mean, it isn't just 1 year.
Yeah, you know, since EPA doesn't approve it, I don't have the sheet on it, but it's I don't know how persistent they are in the soil, but the concern is they're transmitted, you know, bioaccumulating in deer.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good.
No.
Yeah, it's not good.
You know, it's killing indirectly the fisher, which eats the mouse, which ate it, and directly killing bears.
If it's killing a bear,
it's no good.
Yeah, it's probably not going to be.
And our own law enforcement officers, you know, they're seeing these side effects, and
they go home and take that home to their families.
Starts accumulating, and so we're concerned about our firefighters. You're digging line and you bust into one of these, and you know, are you getting it on you?
Exactly.
And how do you know?
Yeah.
You're in the middle of a fire.
Yeah,
or
unfortunately,
you don't
know until you come down with a symptom.
There's a lot of fire or a lot of hunters around here that give me the stories too. They've been hunting because where do you hunt? Where there's no roads in the backcountry, and they're sneaking into them, And then all of a sudden they're looking around, there's marijuana plants.
It's like, uh-oh. Yeah, whoa. Here they are.
Yeah.
All right, we'll come back with more interesting details.
Of our national forest.
Yeah, you know, there's
yes,
all sorts of
very
stuff.
Very diverse.
It's like we have two hours worth of material, don't we? Yeah, of course we do. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Just tuned in. You have to listen to the segment before.
Wow.
I'm like, why are they playing this? You are listening to We the People. You can find all our stuff online, wethepeopleradio.us. We've got years of archives and fun music for you. Good topics, too. Lots of interesting stuff you don't hear much about anyplace else. We're here with Dave Myers from our local forest, the Shasta Trinity National Forest. He's our forest supervisor. So we're talking about all the stuff that affects, I guess, the forest. And on the break, we were talking about wolves. We've done lots of shows on wolves.
Oh, have you?
Lots of shows on wolves,
actually. You don't hardly have any wolves here. And you're doing shows on it?
Oh, yeah. We've done bunches of shows.
We preempted. We knew they were coming.
We was way ahead.
Well, you're way ahead of your time, but you're right up to speed now because we have some.
Yes, we do. It's like a miracle.
Yeah, people are thrilled.
How did we know?
Well, you know, the idea was if we educated people, maybe they'd be a little less, starry-eyed. Oh, isn't this wonderful? We're going to have wolves. They're so furry and friendly. Yeah, they're not furry and friendly. They're killing machines.
Well, they're predators.
I said it first.
They're part of the natural ecosystem.
Yes, they are.
There's probably a couple different opinions on this species, wolves.
Of course
there
are.
They're excited probably about seeing wolves in that wolf pack?
There was a lady, I sat in the hearing over there when they listed them over in Fortuna. This woman got up and said that she just implored them, you have to list them as an endangered species because I want my three-year-old to have the ability to meet one in our backyard.
Oh.
And it's like,
oh, really?
Are you kidding me? Where's Child Protective Services when
that'll
you need
them? Short meeting.
How stupid was you know, that's what people think. They think it's just going to be this.
They're just like a friendly.
This terrific little thing. So now that they've been listed in California, and obviously we're going to get some more.
And now we have some.
You've seen them being in Montana and other places.
Yeah, in Wyoming we had wolves in Idaho. And
How'd that work out?
Well, you know, it was interesting to watch a species that was reintroduced to Yellowstone. And I think member Secretary of Interior Babbitt, under the Clinton administration, released wolves, the gray wolf we're talking about, in 1995. I think it was 95, might have been 94. And also there was a release at the same time in the Frank Church Wilderness in Idaho, which is a very extensive wilderness area and backcountry area. And and watch those wolves, you know, get, conditioned to Yellowstone, where there was strong, and we were talking about this, very strong elk populations, buffalo and moose, and nobody told the wolves to stay in Yellowstone. And so they emerged out onto the national forests around there and of course, on the private lands, and and same in Idaho. And so since then, those populations grew, and each state then managed those populations as experimental. Well, the experiment seemed to work because the ones I am aware of in Idaho, they moved across national forests such as the Payette Forest and the Boise, where they're, you know, establishing various packs as they do because that's what they naturally will do. And the forest would, of course, manage our multiple-use programs. We manage and allow livestock grazing on the forest. So that was my familiarity with it. We had permitted sheep and permitted cattle, which would, you know, wolves would then be a predator.
Sure.
So there's that issue, undoubtedly. And I'm sure there's concerns with that today, you know, with where wolves expand to, because then they, when they left Idaho, they crossed the Snake River. I don't know if they swam or walked across the dams.
Oh, they paid their ferry due, and they got on their little boat.
Now, wolves, they're incredibly adaptable. They're incredibly smart. So I think my money is they walked across the dam. And anyway,
could very well, have, yeah.
Well, people are under this delusion that they live out in the wild and we're never going to see them. Well, if it's a lot easier to just snack on everything that's in a, you know, that's held up close, why wouldn't you do that?
Well,
they're smart.
You know, and they did. There was predator control programs where they would start to eat the cattle, you know, whether it was cattle or sheep. Sheep were more like a Shangri-La sort of environment.
Yeah.
If you get a band of sheep, because a band of sheep on a national forest is like 1,000 ewes and their lambs, and it's like, hey,
right,
this is a good deal.
Yeah, party.
Exactly.
Easy to catch.
And the wolves then, you know, I'm just kind of getting to the point of how we have a pack on the north side of Mount Shasta.
Sure.
Is they did expand across Oregon as a threatened species, you know, mm-hmm. and you know, I think you guys have probably tracked that one wolf that went back and forth between
yeah.
California.
Yep. OR7.
Yeah, and so there's a wolf pack. So, and, you know, it's part of the natural ecosystem, and there's going to be a lot of opinions on and people's thoughts on the value of a wolf and the wolf as part of the ecosystem and how they but, again, as a Forest Service, see, we don't manage the wildlife. The states do.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's a threatened endangered species, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service does. We, however, manage multiple uses, and that's our involvement then. And so,
well, because you know there are all these myths surrounding the idea of wolves. You know, they eat only the sick animals. You know, so they make the herd stronger. Well, that's stupid. They don't eat the sick animals. They eat the good ones. I mean, it's
they
like us.
Eat we eat the slow ones.
Yeah, we don't go to the grocery store and get the rotten produce. So
they definitely take advantage of. Because they are so smart mm-hmm. and adaptable, they will take this, you know, the easier prey.
Sure.
So if it was in Yellowstone, the weaker buffalo, they would definitely take that.
Well, they eat the young. I mean,
the young?
They
you don't replace the herd with the young ones.
Are they veal if they're buffalo?
I don't know.
No, only cows, huh?
Yeah.
They're
it
veal.
Might be. But moose, where I was, the moose seemed to be a little more vulnerable because the moose mm-hmm. and calves would stay up higher in the mountains and in the snow.
But you said they were pretty smart. What did the moose do to?
The wolves were smart.
Yeah, the moose were
ornery.
So the moose didn't no. You know, kind of figure out a way around it.
No,
they
fight. They'll but you know eventually
they didn't do well.
No, the young all got
from everything
eaten,
I read.
Then, yeah, so, they hamstring them and.
You know, we will manage the habitat, and mm-hmm. And that's our job. And it's interesting though to watch across a very large geographical area that we're talking about from Idaho and Wyoming to this wolf pack now on the north side of Mount Shasta, and definitely plenty of controversy around wolves. And
what do you project, knowing now that the wolves are here? What do you see in the near and distant future as far as the impact of the wolf in our area? What do you expect?
Well, I think
to happen?
They're very adaptable because and I do need to say there are some fantastic wolf biologists,
mm-hmm.
and that's a good question for them. So I don't know, except for I know from my experience they do well where there's a predator or a prey base, elk,
sure.
deer. You know, they will get on private land and, you know, because they don't see the national forest boundaries.
No.
And we know that.
Yeah.
You know,
the idea that they're going to just stay in, public land.
Well, it might eat a 4-H project.
Yeah. Yeah, they see a cow or a lamb or a pig. It's like, we don't eat those.
Well, in New Mexico, they have cages where the kids wait for the buses. So, you know,
the hard
not
thing
opposed
is,
to children either.
Often as we watch the wolves on the forest I've worked on, again, expand is just watching how far some of the collared wolves would travel between Idaho and Wyoming.
Oh, yeah, that's amazing,
amazing
isn't it?
Stories.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, so they cross into Northern California, and you'll see them, you know, the young ones satellite out, and it's just amazing how they'll travel. And so it's just a lot of opinions on it.
Right, right.
Well, what about hikers and that kind of thing?
I don't think there's a problem at all with the people, per se. I've never seen a problem with.
They do attack people.
They could. I haven't seen it, you know, where we even had high densities of wolf packs, because generally they go away from people. Compared to other species, like a grizzly bear, they're like, boy, I don't want to walk into their space. Right. I've seen wolves, and they'll just want to avoid you.
Right.
Well, but the coloring of them kind of makes them people, you know, they say that the more they collar them and handle them, the less afraid of people that they are.
Well, that could be. I think they get them conditioned, though, to the natural environment. They're wild. They are definitely wild wolves.
Mm-hmm.
And
are you allowed? Are you guys allowed to do anything to manage for them near campgrounds or any of that? What do you do if you have a wolf that was being a problem? You have to call Fish and Wildlife.
Yeah, we would call U.S. Fish and Wildlife or the California Fish and Wildlife.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because you guys don't do that.
No.
Because they're animals. You guys only do like the trees and the ground.
The wildlife.
Yeah. And fortunately, where this pack is, we don't have a lot of permitted livestock on the forest. You know, where some areas you would expect direct effects. If I had a lot of permitted sheep on the forest, well, I'd be concerned that we'd probably be running into predation problems. We don't have that there.
That's
so
good.
I'm not really concerned about effects on national forests with this wolf pack.
No, I think it's going to be a while before anybody even reports a sighting. I mean, when you're only dealing with a small group.
Oh, they see them up north. There's more than one wolf pack. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it'll be a while before we see any impacts, but I do believe there will be impacts.
Well, and since they're a listed species, you're not allowed to do. It's considered unlawful to do anything that would cause them to burn calories. That's the definition of harassment.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you can, you know, mentally will them to go the other way, away from your animals. But, you know,
but don't run.
Because we were like, okay, can you, like, chase them with an ATV or something? And they, you know, no. And bottom line is it came down to anything that causes them to burn calories can't do.
Yeah, but you can't do that to deer either.
It's like,
you can't harass wild.
Yeah, but you're not worried about deer coming and snacking on your, you know, livestock.
That's true.
Deer are good. Deer just roam around and get in the way of your car.
But even elk will predate on agricultural fields.
That's true. Elk are kind of a pain.
All wildlife need managed.
Yeah, they do.
I mean,
yeah.
Places.
And, you know, I manage them with a side of potatoes and some gravy, and I'll tell you what.
There you go.
This is our PETA moment to be people eating tasty animals. Bob, what do you have for us?
Quick break.
On that note.
With that.
You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
I sleep all night and I work all day.
Here's a lumberjack and he's okay. Sleeps all night and he works all day.
I cut down trees, I eat my lunch, I go to the lavatory. On Wednesdays I go shopping and have button scones for tea.
He cuts down trees, eats his lunch, he goes to the lavatory. On Wednesdays he goes shopping.
I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay. I sleep all night and I work all day. I cut down trees, I skip and jump. I like to...
Yeah. Where's the high heels?
Yeah, no.
I like the part about
him
wearing high heels.
I think that was the Monty Python version.
Oh.
That was Monty Python.
I was going to say, wait a minute, that's the only version there is.
Yeah. Well, we cut the high heels part out.
One more
salute. We didn't figure just Dave
for
would
you.
Mind.
Thank just you. For you, Dave.
Thank you.
One more salute to the Marching Lumberjacks.
Exactly.
We changed the lyrics to that one, the Marching
I'll
Lumberjacks.
I'll bet you did.
I think I remember those lyrics. We had lots of fun doing that.
Yeah, so on the break we learned that...
we always learn more on the break.
Yeah.
we should
leave the mics open
on the
break.
Yeah, we're super sorry you couldn't be with us on the break. Because we always learn all sorts of fun stuff.
Yeah, but you have a mule team.
We do. We have a...
Now, what'd you call it? A mule train?
String.
String.
Mule string.
So, you know, mules are pack animals, and we have what I call a world-class pack string. And I'm really proud of that on this national forest. And it's, we have packers working out of our Weaverville office. And that pack string with our, led by horses and our packers. And
what do they pack?
So they pack in all the food and equipment for our trail crews and maintaining and building new trails in the wilderness area.
Where there's no vehicles allowed.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's the kind of experience a lot that is expected in the wilderness trails.
Sure.
And remote and a lot of solitude. So how do you get it in there? You pack it on mules, and it's just they just do a fantastic job. But it's becoming more rare to have a really good pack string. Our pack string was so good, and I'll brag about this a little bit.
How good are they?
They were in the Rose Parade this year.
Oh, no fooling.
Yeah, and they were, they also pack in a lot of firefighting equipment when we have fires back there. So you don't have to use helicopters.
How many are there?
Yes.
Well, we have 20-some mules, but in a pack string, you might have 6 to 8.
Mm-hmm.
So
who takes care of them?
We do, the Forest Service.
But where do they live?
Well, up at the barn in Weaverville, we feed them hay in the summer, but they're up on the forest, up in the meadows when they go in. In the wintertime, they're actually down here in Redding area.
Mm-hmm.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I bet they like doing it.
Mules love to be worked. They need a job, kind of like our Australian Shepherd dog. He needs a job, and these mules need to be worked, and they don't want to be left behind when you leave the barn with the horse trailer. They want to be in there ready to go to work.
They want to go, yeah.
And well-trained, and you need professionals, and those are packers. They know how to pack an animal properly.
A mule's a big animal.
Yeah, it's cross, of course, between a horse and a donkey.
A donkey, yeah.
So they're kind of, there's all the stubbornness and all that, so
sure.
You have to kind of know what you're doing.
Definitely have to know what you're doing to be safe out there so you don't have we call it a wreck if things go bad.
Mm-hmm.
A wreck.
Yeah, so, you match them up well, and you train them so you're not taking green mules out. We went to the Midwest, I think it was maybe Kansas, to buy our mules, and they're matched mules. Looked really good in the Rose Parade. We were there with our chief of the Forest Service this last year, and
carrying stuff?
Yeah, we had them packed with the traditional packs of what they might have carried, and then another. We had a couple strings, actually three strings. One carried firefighting equipment, one carried culverts and things like that we would use for trail construction.
Wow, you have pictures of them? You need to send me some pictures. I'll put them on the put them on the site.
Yeah, so it was. They could carry hundreds of pounds, and so they'll carry all the food in. We have a trail crew, it's the California Conservation Crew that we work with. Great organization. They have a backcountry crew of young adults, mostly young. They are young.
Are they volunteers? Or are they employees?
They get paid a little bit,
uh-huh.
Not a lot, but they go in for 5 months straight into the wilderness.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
They don't come out on weekends. They don't come out even once every 30 days. They're in there.
Like a young man's sport right there.
And, I went in and saw them this summer, and there was women there too, and they're working really hard maintaining trails and building trails that will stay in the wilderness. They won't erode out. Requires a lot of solid engineering techniques and trail construction and design. And these, so we do that, and these crews build those trails. And it's right down to it's all crowbars, moving big boulders.
Yeah, they're using the rocks and the logs and the stuff that's there
to
build the trails.
The old star bits, this is primitive handwork. They're pounding rock with sledges to get smaller rocks to fill in the grooves.
Mm-hmm.
Designing it so if a horse is going up the trail, it has just the right stride and step so it's not having to hop,
right,
if you will. And so pretty incredible. A lot of people don't know that work goes on in the backcountry.
Sure.
But it's a big job maintaining our trail system.
How much trails? I think you said there was
it's just
so many miles of trails in the forest.
I just looked that up a little bit ago.
Yeah, it was like 1,400 miles or something of trails.
It was 1,538 miles.
Yeah, so just
that's a lot.
And in wilderness, again, it's non-mechanized, so it's not like you're using rock drills
mm-hmm.
that are mechanized.
No, it's all hand stuff.
It's hand, where somebody's holding that star bit, and others hitting it with a sledgehammer to drill a hole, to bust them apart, and all that.
Wow.
Now, did you have meals at your other, up in Montana, and is this common? Like, do all the forests have them?
No, they don't. We did on the Shoshone National Forest, which is right adjacent to Yellowstone, where you have a lot of wilderness and backcountry. You pretty much need pack strings to get your people in to do work. It's surprising, too, how much use, public use, there is in the wilderness areas. Sometimes you'll hear, it's an area of no use because there's no mechanized use. Well, that's a fallacy.
Right.
There's a lot of use. And, people that want a recreation experience where they want a little bit more solitude, they want to ride their horse in. And we have great partners, backcountry horsemen. And in this area in Redding, there's a fantastic backcountry horseman.
What do the horses and mules eat? Do they eat the vegetation that's there, or do you have to haul food in for them?
Well, we'll haul in, if they're going to stay, some grain or pelleted food.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll just be out in the dry meadows or wet meadows to forage, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They stay around. Yeah. And just so you probably have to stake out the bell mare, so, because you don't want the meals to get a wild hare and head back to the barn,
exactly,
which is 20 miles away,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Somebody's going to be doing a lot of walking.
Yeah.
And off they go.
Stranger things have happened, you know.
Right.
So,
interesting. So if you have some sort of a medical issue, can they can probably bring a person out, too.
Oh, yeah. Maybe. Yeah. And, you know, if we do get true medical issues in the wilderness, we do allow, search and rescue, or the sheriff can fly a helicopter in.
A helicopter.
Yeah, we still do.
You have radios
like
and communication.
Sure, everybody has a cell phone back there.
Sure.
Mount Shasta is a wilderness area, so that has an incredible.
The actual Mount Shasta?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
An incredible mountaineering program we have there. And people are always climbing up Mount Shasta, just to climb and to, then they slide down. And they're always getting hurt. And
always hear about some situation.
We partner with Siskiyou County and CHP to rescue people. But a fantastic mountaineering program. We have an avalanche program to, predict or warn for avalanches. Because this is, it's amazing how many people are going up Mount Shasta every day.
Yeah.
Just hiking, and a lot of different types of people and users
mm-hmm.
Up there as well.
Yeah. And of varying skills and abilities.
International visitors.
Oh, yeah, that's not a rookie trip to go up top of Mount Shasta.
Well, it's 14,000 feet,
14,000
right?
feet?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's, you don't want to play around with something like that. You could end up...
I hiked up.
Not doing it again.
Living.
I hiked part way up, then took a picture of that second half that I didn't hike up. I was like, you definitely noticed the oxygen difference.
Oh, man, I noticed that we went up Lassen, and that's only, 10-something, and you're huffing and puffing up there.
Yeah.
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 That's pretty cool.
Okay.
Well, thanks a million zillion.
Dave, thanks
all
for
right.
coming in.
Thank you.
Coming and hanging out with us.
Great to have us.
So, we want to put some contact info on there. We have it all on the website, and so people can get a hold of you if they have questions. And if they want to go be a forest person, ranger, and that kind of stuff, fun job.
It's a great job.
There you go.
Good.
Go use your national forest. But don't grow pot in it, please.
Yeah.
Hey, this has been We the People Radio. You can find everything about us online, wethepeopleradio.us, and we'll see you next week.